All right, guys, welcome back. EYL episode 28
weeks in.
28, monumental. First and foremost, we have to thank Black Enterprise for featuring us. That was a very
that was a good look.
Gracious article that they did for us.
Yeah, it was the number one shared story last week on
their website. So like almost 3,000 shares. So and shout out to everybody for sharing it and all of the response that we've gotten for that. It's very encouraging. Very encouraging. So thank you. Thank you for Black Enterprise. We appreciate you. Nicole Webb, thank you for writing the story. We appreciate you.
Well done.
And then we also have to shout out Curl Fest.
Whew, amazing. Yeah. Shout out to all the girls of Curly Girl Collective. We actually attended for the first time and definitely won't be our last time.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful to see Melanin celebrated and everybody come and have a good time. And I was in awe of it.
Yeah, for sure. Episode 25, if you haven't listened to episode 25, that's with Simone Mayer. She's one of the co-founders of Curl Fest. Curl Fest is the largest natural hair festival in the world. So check that episode out. It's a good one. She dropped a lot of gems on women, hair, and also on the festival industry. So we actually went. This is our first year actually going and attending. It was 20,000, 30,000 people there, and it was dope.
It was crazy.
Really good.
And they're not done. Like, they're going to be doing Atlanta. So Atlanta, get ready. They coming your way, so shout out to them.
For sure, for sure. But we're going to jump right into it. We got a very, very special show. We actually, we're doing a little different this week. We got so much information that we want to give out to the public that we're going to release two shows this week. We're going to do our show, which you're listening to right now, Tuesday, 5 p.m., and then we also going to drop on Friday. We did that before.
Yeah, episode 24 we did.
Episode 24, but this is just going to be two different episodes, and we got some information for our international listeners as well on the episode that's coming out Friday, because we get a lot of feedback. We get a lot of positive feedback from people all over, from Africa, from Europe, from Asia, and they're like, you know, we want to have a little bit more of an international feel. Yeah, so
they love the content, but sometimes it doesn't relate to their country.
Yeah, so we got some international information as well as information for the globe. And I always say, even for people that live in America, don't limit yourself to America. Like, the world is big, right? So the international information isn't just for international listeners. It's for you too, because we need to get money every single way in the world, and we need to educate ourselves everywhere in the world. It's the world is flat. Not literally like Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, Kyrie got in trouble for that.
It's flat as far as information. Information is the same. This is why we can be on the charts in Dubai, be in the charts
in Botswana,
be in the charts in...
Shout out to Bermuda. We number
Bermuda,
seven out
there. Bermuda and Trinidad, Jamaica, all of these different places is because we're receiving information at the same time right now. So it's a level playing field. So we need to educate ourselves on what's going on all over the world, not just what's happening in America.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. So a very special guest today, Fritz Charles. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
A legend in his own right.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
For sure. For sure. So he's going to tell his story, but very interesting story. You got a lot to talk about from Wall Street to crypto. And one of the things that we've been getting requested to cover the most is cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah, we got some stories.
Yeah, so we got our own personal story, but we wanted to bring an expert in the field in as well. So he's an expert in the field as well as a bunch of other things as well. So we're gonna get into crypto. But before we start, can we get a backstory on how you got here? Because your story is really interesting as far as working in Wall Street, and you were with the infamous Lehman Brothers, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So all right. So
job of a lifetime.
Yeah. All right. Can you explain that? Because that's an interesting story.
Now, for sure, for sure. I try to make it as concise as I could be because it's pretty long. But thanks for having me. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, you know, just kind of the personal background is I grew up in Queens. Born in Queens, New York, attended college at Brew College in New York, studied finance, and my first job out of school was at Lehman Brothers.
Which is not common.
Yeah, that's not common. No, I went hard for that job. It was definitely a job that was a dream job. Lehman Brothers at the time, this is 2006, you know, I would say, you know, probably, you know, it's Goldman Sachs and like Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley were on that next level.
Investment bank. If anybody's not familiar, Lehman Brothers was one of the biggest investment banks in the world.
Yep.
On Wall Street, like Goldman Sachs, same level as that.
Exactly. And so I got a job there as a trader. So I traded equity derivatives, equity swaps, equity options, and my clients were hedge funds. And crazy, fun job, you know, really intense. I was 22 years old kind of doing transactions that were in the billions.
Lucrative job.
Yeah. You know, they didn't touch the billions. I'm talking six digits. Six digits as a 22 year old out of Queens is major. And then I, you know, did my thing, got, you know, you kind of, the way you're hired as an analyst. So you do 2 years as an analyst, then they decide what to do with you. And I got promoted to associate. And this is 2008. You know, 2008, obviously, the financial crisis happened. And about 3 months after I got promoted, we went bankrupt. And so, and then what happened was, it was like 3 days where people didn't know what was going on. As far as like whether it was a, you know, whether the building would be open, whether we had insurance, you were just basically working for a bankrupt entity. Mm-hmm. And then we got word that Barclays bought us, and then there was like a whole lot of hoopla as far as like who's going to be left with Barclays, who's going to get laid off. And I was one of the fortunate people to keep my job, so I just ended up working at Barclays. This is before the Barclays Center, so I didn't get any tickets.
So the financial crisis of 2008. When banks were closing left and right, Wall Street was in a mess, and you were trading very complicated swap derivatives. Can you give a 11th grade explanation on what swap derivatives
are? Yeah. So basically, what it is basically it's a contract that says I traded equity swaps on basically equity indexes. So the most popular equity index is the S&P 500. So you always hear about it. If you watch CNBC or even watch any news, they say, oh, the market went up 5%. 9 times out of 10, they're talking about the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. And so the S&P 500 is 500 stocks, right? So to trade 500 stocks, especially if you're not the hugest hedge fund or hugest client, like that's really complicated. But what you could do with us is, all right, well, we'll give you a contract that gives you the same return of the 500 stocks. We'll take care of like buying all of them. And then what you have to do with us is you give us an interest rate. So we're going to say, all right, well, you pay us 3%. What we used to quote it as is LIBOR. So LIBOR is a London Interbank Offering Rate, which is basically like, it's almost like the international federal funds rate. It's like the set rate. Like sometimes you hear about people talking about, oh, the Fed's going to raise rates or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is like the international version of that. Mm-hmm. So the hedge fund says, I say the hedge fund, all right, well, you want the return on the S&P over a year? I'll give you that, but you got to go and pay me, 5%, something like that for that. So if the S&P goes up above 500%, let's say the S&P goes up 7%, 7 minus 5 is 2, they're doing well. Yeah. If the S&P is below 5%, then they're out of money, right? So it's kind of like this weird, it's almost like a bet, so to speak.
How much money was being traded on that?
So, yeah, I mean, a normal transaction with these clients would be 500 million, 1 billion. And so they'll call us up like, hey, I want to move $1 billion worth of S&P 500, and we would take that trade for them.
And you're doing that at 22 years old?
Yes.
And you're doing that every day?
Every day.
So you're trading
from 9:30 to 4 straight.
$1 billion every day?
Basically, yeah.
So the reason why I say that is, even if the average person probably will never invest in this type of investment, it's important to understand and know, right? We had Ash Cash on. It was a great interview for us. And he spoke about when he worked in a bank. He used to be the CEO of a credit union. And he spoke about when he was on behind the scenes of a bank, and he started to see that wealthy people had a team of people that was working for him, right? And so much stuff that the average person, black, white, Chinese, the average person has no idea what happens, right? But these things affect the world, right?
100%.
And so it's like a small group of people that really affect the whole world, right? So that ties into the Lehman Brothers going bankrupt. So people, I don't think people fully understand, or maybe they forgot because we have short-term memories,
right?
About 2008, right? How did 2008 happen? When, if you're not familiar, if you're too young, that's when the financial crisis hit. We had the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Yep.
Stock market was down like 40%. The housing market crashed. Everything just fell apart. It's like a perfect storm. And then the banks, big banks, had to get bailed out.
Of course.
So, but this all started because it was in England. It was a trading block in England, right? That was doing prime mortgages, subprime mortgages?
No, it was U.S. It was
US?
In England. Yeah, that was England. It was U.S. So, investment banking is split in between a couple of different divisions. So there's an investment bank that kind of helps people go public, like IPO and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Then you have the capital market side, which was I was in. And you split that between fixed income and equities. Equity just means stock. Mm-hmm. So my side was doing stock. But the other side is where they focus on bonds, mortgages, a bunch of other things. And so what they so the way that mortgages happen, if I go get a mortgage from like Bank of America or something like that, or a local credit union, they give me a mortgage, and then now they have they're basically a creditor to me, right? And they take that, but they take like 1,000 of me, and they put the mortgages together. And then they go to Lehman Brothers or some other bank, and they're like, "Yo, package this together and sell it for me." And so what Lehman Brothers does is they give you the upfront money. I give you a mortgage for a house that's like 200 grand or whatever. And over time, people pay interest and stuff like that. Maybe I don't want to wait 30 years to get my money back. I'll go to Lehman Brothers and I was like, you know what? This 200 grand mortgage, I'll sell it to you for like 210 grand. And by the way, I got 100 of those. Put it all together. And then what Lehman Brothers does, or all the investment banks, they take it, put it together, they chop it up, and they sell it to different people, right? But if the mortgage is, but the way that they price it is the risk, right? So there's people that put 5% in their homes. There's people got 520 credit scores. Some people have 700 credit scores. Those things, the market says, you know what? I'll pay you a premium for the good credit people. I'll pay you a discount for the bad credit people. But if the people in the middle are not communicating straight what the underlying assets are, right? Or what was happening at the time, you had a real estate market where that was going up for so long, so that people with like 500, 600 credit scores and making only 50K a year.
Stated income.
Right? We're getting houses that were like $500,000. Right?
Not to cut you off, but we covered stated income, but we didn't really talk about stated income. So people might not know stated income. Yeah. Stated income was a policy in the mid-2000s where you can state your income. So if anybody's familiar with the process to get a mortgage, you got to jump through hula hoops to get a mortgage, right? Yeah. You got to like bring your tax documents for the last 2 years, and you got to bring all kinds of stuff. They got to check your credit and all that. But in the mid-2000s, it was you just walk into the bank and you state your income, and whatever you stated your income, that's what they said.
Yeah, so you could say I made $150,000.
You could say I made $500,000.
$500,000, you're right.
You can be a gardener and make $15 an hour and go into a bank and say, I make $500,000 a year. They take your word for it and they give you a mortgage
based on
for $1 million home. And people was doing that. It was crazy.
Yeah, 100%. And the only reason people were doing that is because they didn't have to hold the bag, right? Like they were like, all right, because if you're a bank and I give you, I mean, just think about anybody. If I give that person, my homeboy, a loan, and I know he doesn't have a job, know he can't pay me back, but I have to wait for that person to pay me back, I'm not gonna probably give my homeboy a loan, right? But if I knew I could take my homeboy's loan and pass it to somebody else, and they are on the hook for it, and they gotta worry about collecting from him.
Somebody left holding the bag. Right?
So that's what happened. Because of the capital markets, you were able to do that super efficiently. And that worked for a few years because all the real estate prices are going up and up, right? Because even if I have a loan against a house and the person can't pay and the house goes up, I'm good. So I'm okay with that, right? Or that person is okay because they're more likely to pay me. But until that stops, it's like musical chairs, right? So anyway, Lehman Brothers was a leader in that. Basically, they took those packaged mortgages and sold them out. But what happened was, it's good when you could just pass them out. But then when you can't liquidate them as quickly, and then now you hold them in the bag, and then real estate prices go down, then people default. They're not paying their mortgages. The houses that are behind the mortgages are not as valuable, right? It becomes this cycle. And then now Lehman Brothers has bad credit on their books from the people they give credit to. Then people don't want to give Lehman Brothers credit, right? Then the stock market, it's like, yo, I heard Lehman Brothers can't get credit. Then it becomes this spiral.
Trickle down effect.
And then Lehman Brothers has a transaction with Bear Stearns, and Bear Stearns has a transaction with JP Morgan. Now people are like, oh, actually, I know you, Lehman Brothers can't pay their money, and I know Lehman Brothers owes you, so now you screw too, and now I'm not going to buy your stock, and then everything kind of just went in a cycle.
So that,
you know what it sounds like to cut you off? You know what it sounds like? So it's almost a Ponzi scheme, right? And if you understand how Ponzi schemes work, you only really get screwed in a Ponzi scheme when things go bad. It's not a lot of people make money in a Ponzi scheme, like Bernie Madoff, right?
Right.
If you invested early with Bernie Madoff, you made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? Because the thing about it is he's taking new money and he's paying the old investors, and then he's just kind of repeating the process, right? It only goes bad when people ask for their money back in bulk. They don't have enough to cover it.
Right.
But as long as nobody really asks for that money in bulk, you can keep that thing going. He kept the scam going for 30 years because nobody really asked for anything. You're giving people 12% a year. Why would you ask for your money back?
Until a recession happens.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's all good when you hedge these kind of bets until it's not all good anymore. It's all good till it's not.
Exactly. That's life.
It's all good till it's not. It's all good so till then, not. So how quickly did these guys go under? Like how, cause that happened like in a couple of months, right? Like,
well, it happened a couple of months, but like, I guess 07 is when things got a little bit hairy. But then like things stabilized and in early 08. So Bear Stearns was the first one to go down. So Bear Stearns went down probably like the first quarter of 08. Lehman Brothers was, the stock just started going down. So stock probably was trading in the 120, 140s. And like throughout the year, just kind of kept going down. And I don't know if you guys covered this on your podcast previously, but basically there's these people that are called short sellers. Mm. You could basically bet that the stock's going down.
We haven't covered that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so basically short selling is like, it's weird, but basically what you do is you say, all right, I think this company sucks. I think this stock's gonna go down. I'm gonna go to my broker or to a bank and say, let me borrow that stock. I'm gonna sell it. And then I'm gonna buy it back later on at a lower price. So if the stock is at 50 and you know the company is not making money, or you think the company's not making money, you say, all right, I'm gonna buy it back later. I might buy it back at 25. I sold it at 50, bought it back at 25. That's $25 profit, mm-hmm. right? And so it's actually reversed, because obviously usually what you do is you buy then you sell. In this case, you sell then you buy. And the way you're able to do it is because these firms will take other people's assets, like the other people's stock, and lend it to you. It's similar to how people take people's savings account and use those as loans, right? And the question is like, why would a bank do that? You actually pay an interest rate on that money while you have it short.
Yeah, because that's The Big Short. You ever read that book?
Yep.
Big Short.
Yeah, movie too.
That movie's powerful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what these guys did. They made a boatload of money from shorting.
Yep, they were shorting. They're shorting those mortgage assets.
Yeah, they predicted that this would happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And you went to Wharton School of Business, right?
That's right. Shout I did that after them. That. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Wharton. So,
that comes because of what happens at Lehman.
Yeah, so I go to Lehman, and at the time I thought I had it made. I was gonna be working in that place till I was older, stacking bread, and maybe investing on the side. But like I thought I had my career made. But as that was happening, I was seeing what's going on. The thing about trading particularly, your skill set is your skill set. You can't take it anywhere else, right? If I traded that one thing, I can't even go and trade bonds after that. Like the only jobs I could get was at another bank doing the same exact thing. And guess what? None of them were hiring. And you know, like I said, I went to CUNY Brew College, and it was a great school, great education for the money. But I felt like that was a time where I really needed a network. And also I needed to kind of think about where I want to take my career. I wanted to do something a little bit more. I had more control over it. Mm-hmm. And I decided to apply to business school, and I ended up getting into Wharton.
You're the third person who's come
the third person that's come from Wharton that's been on the podcast. Shout out to Brandon Copeland.
Yep, Derek Ferguson.
And Derek Ferguson. Yeah, those are all both Shout great out. Episodes.
Yeah, good alumni.
So you got a lot of pressure to live up to.
Wharton,
if anybody's not familiar, is one of the best, if not the best business school in the world, not just the country, the world. So we have our third Wharton alumni here, and he just gave you a very good breakdown of very complex trading. So you just got an Ivy League education in 20 minutes.
UIL University.
Yeah. Once again, we provided free education for you guys. So you're welcome. So now we're going to go into the second segment where we're going to talk about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and everything you need to know about it. All right, so now we're gonna go into what everybody's been waiting for. We're gonna break down cryptocurrency. Before we go into cryptocurrency, we gotta tell a story.
Yeah.
We'll tell our own personal story about crypto.
We're all involved.
So if you listen to the podcast, you know that our theme is transparency. We tell, our real stories in real life, and our guests tell their real stories. And we also have the slogan of All Money In. Shout out to Nip, rest in peace. It's real because we really tried everything. At one point in time, we literally tried everything.
Yeah. like no exaggeration.
Yeah. Like we tried everything.
We just kept like, hey, listen, something's gonna work.
So all right. So here's the story on cryptocurrency, right? So 2017, right? The draft. We got to take it back to the draft of 2017. So Donovan Mitchell, shout out to Donovan Mitchell, right? Hometown hero. And we were at the Barclays Center because we're good friends with his family. Mm-hmm. And they invited us, and we were at the suite when he got drafted.
Shout out to the Mets.
Yeah. Once again, the Knicks screwed that up and didn't draft him.
Yeah, but we were sitting there like, you know, the Knicks had a chance to do it. He worked out for them. Dad was like, I think they got a chance, and nope.
That's what we do.
Frank Ntilikina.
They didn't draft him. But he got drafted by Utah. But anyway, we was there with his family, and one of our good friends, Inez, shout out to Inez. So her kid went to a private school, and one of his friends, this is why networking is so important, right? People that you meet. His friend was like a 20-year-old kid, right? Sure. And I just met him, and we were just talking randomly. He's like, what do you do for a living? I'm a financial advisor. So we just started talking. Mind you, he's 20 years old at this time. I think he's like a freshman, a sophomore in college, something like that. Yeah. And he's telling me, he's like, you know, I just bought this Ethereum. He's like, I put $20,000 into Ethereum. You know, I said I put $10,000 into Ethereum like 5 months ago, and it went to $100,000. I cashed out. He said my friend put $100,000 into Ethereum. It went to $1 million. He cashed out. He started a hedge fund.
What is this, 20 years?
I don't even think he was. He might not have been 20. I think he was 18.
Like 19
I think
or something like that.
He got the money for as a graduation gift, I believe.
Well, you know that. And that's the power of family.
Of course.
Right? He wasn't from our community. That's for damn sure.
But, yeah, I already knew based on that story.
But so when he told me that, I told Jamal, I'm like, well, we got, like, what's this? Like, this, because I heard about cryptocurrency. I heard about Bitcoin, but I ain't really hear about Ethereum.
Yeah.
I'm like, hold up, wait, like, what's going on here? And that's when I started studying it, but I still was kind of apprehensive. I ain't really sure. So then I see Bitcoin. I'm just studying it. I'm just a student of the game. And like October, I see Bitcoin just start climbing. It went from like 6,000 to 7,000. No, it went from like 3,000 to like 4,000 to like 5,000. So then I called my man, shout out to Jason Lewis. I called him, and he's a Bitcoin expert. And I'm like, okay, tell me everything I need to know about cryptocurrency. And he educated me for 2.5 hours. And I asked every single question that I could. I asked like 1,000 questions. Every question I had, he educated me on it. And that was like around November.
Yeah.
That was like November. Actually, late October. It was late October. It was November. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I found out this app called Coinbase where you can buy cryptocurrency, right? So he educated me. And he was telling me about the three biggest currencies at that time, which is Litecoin, Bitcoin, and Ethereum. So he's telling me about it. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to put my money in. I put $6,000 in. I told the group chat, I told the guys, I'm like, look, I put $6,000 in. I spread it across those three coins. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not telling y'all to do this. This is money that I feel comfortable losing because it's a risk. Like I feel comfortable losing it if I lose it, but I don't know what's going to happen. So then me and Jamal, we go to Asia for a month, right?
This is now December.
We went to Asia for 20 days. December 1st, we left for 20 days.
Don't let that go over your heads. 20 days.
Now, I let a life you could write a book on. I'm gonna write a book soon down the line.
Slight stunt.
But we went to Asia with a return ticket. We went with a ticket there and a ticket back and two nights in Bangkok. That's it for 20 days. We was gonna figure it out as we went. We just winged it. We went to 5 different countries. We was just winging it as we were literally winging it. Like we were buying hotels at the airport. We was just figuring it out day to day. So I'm in Asia, and it just so happened, as fate would have it, I brought into the crypto space like 1 week before it started to skyrocket. Yeah, if anybody's not familiar, December of
2017
is legendary in crypto world. Like everything went up like 1,000%, 100%, like it was crazy. So long story short, I'm in Asia, and I had $6,000 invested. Every single day I'm waking up, and I'm just getting $500, $600 more dollars. It's going up. 7,000, 8,000, 9,000. It's
like
just
dopamine.
Yeah,
now we're not sleeping.
Yeah, I'm out in Thailand, and I'm more focused on that than anything. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, I'm about to make $1 million before summer. So then, Troy starts. So I'm telling the guys, I'm like, I'm sending them screenshots. Like, I don't know what y'all doing, but right. I'm getting money out here. So Troy's like, he starts studying it, like. One thing about Troy, he's good with research. So he starts studying it. Like he's up all night.
Team no sleep.
And he starts telling me about all these other coins, Tron, and all of these different things. And, but meanwhile, I'm thinking I'm doing good because I'm going up like 100%, 300%, 400%. He's like, that's not enough. He's like, yeah, you earning, but that's not enough. These other coins going up 1,000%, 3,000%. He's like, you got to come home. Like, I never forget, I was in Hong Kong. I was in Hong Kong and he called me.
Like, come home. Cause this is like fact, right? So I heard about Bitcoin prior to all this, right? Because I was in the music downloading services, right?
I feel you.
So at that time, the U.S. had said, early 2000, they were like, yo, they're going to prohibit illegal downloads, right? So people started coming up with web sharing sites like Mega Upload, RapidShare. If anybody downloaded music, you know those sites. And one of the things as far as payment was Bitcoin, right? And there's no way that the government could track you. So I'm like, all right, that sounds pretty cool.
Of course.
And then I never heard about it again, right? People were using it. I kept seeing it. I never heard about it until like November. And Shai's like, yo, I'm putting money in. Like, he's like 2 weeks from leaving. I'm like, hey, whatever. And then, like he said, he started texting us. I'm like, yo, he actually made some money. So now it's like, nah, I got to figure this out. So he leaves. And I'm like, still trying to figure this out. I'm studying it. And like, I'll never forget, I read this article on this dude, Justin Sun, who created Tron, TRX.
Yep.
And so I'm like, wow, this guy has a vision for currency. Like, he's going to do it through video games. And right, I'm thinking like, wow, like Gods of War. Like, these are these games where it's like, it's not real money anymore. Like, people are actually using currency inside of games. It's like how before Fortnite,
of course,
it was like, yo, we'll give you the game for free, but you'll buy things in it. And I'm like, all right, well, how do I get this, right? So after I start studying it, right, I knew Coinbase, and I'm like, there's got to be more to this, right? Because I can't even find TRX on Coinbase.
Right.
And so I study it, and then I hear this company called Binance. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Binance, I'm telling you, it was like 3 in the morning. I had to wait because they were on like, y'all 12 hours ahead? How many hours?
Yeah, it was like 12 hours.
I waited. I said, listen, get Jamal, y'all got to come home. Like, I'm just like, yo, book a flight back. I found something.
I said, book a flight back. Nah, that's a fact.
We found something.
Yeah, he kept talking about Tron. He was like, this Tron. I'm like, I don't know, man, about Tron.
Less than a cent.
You know, it's funny, though. Little do you know, you were like in the home of Tron.
Yeah, exactly.
He was actually in the right spot. He just had to find that community where he was at.
It was crazy. I remember, it was Hong Kong? Were you in Hong Kong?
I was in Hong Kong.
I remember in the background was all these lights.
That was Hong Kong.
I was like, yo, come on.
Jamal almost died in Hong Kong.
That's another story.
Different story for a different day. He almost died. But I was in Hong Kong by myself, and I had all these lights in the background. You like, come home. I'm like, I'm in Asia. I'm having the time of my life out here.
Come home right now.
So we came home, and when I got home, the first thing I did, I came to his house, and he educated me on how to like buy coins. It's a whole process. We're gonna talk about that.
Yes.
But how to buy coins, how to put the money in, all that stuff, right?
Market caps, all that.
So then so anybody that knows me know that I kind of have an addictive personality. I've never done any drugs in my life, and I'm a light drinker, but I'm very compulsive. It's worked out a lot of times. It's been very bad for me a lot of times as well. But I make very compulsive decisions. So when I started making money, and I'm like, okay, so now I educated myself on what we call altcoins. We'll explain that later too.
Yeah.
So then I just started rolling the dice. I started like buying coins and doing all, and it was crazy. So by like the first week in January, my 6,000 grew to 28,000.
Yep.
$28,000 in a month. 6,000 to 28 in a month. And I'm feeling like Warren Buffett. Like, invincible.
We said it to ourselves. We're like, yo, if we don't make 100,000 by June, we did something wrong.
No, I was feeling invincible. I told you, I was planning on making 800,000 in crypto for that year.
We calculated it.
I did the calculations, I did the whole thing. Everything fell apart.
Not yet.
No, it did.
No. Early January, it went down, but then it came back like late January. We're like, all right, we're back.
Right.
And then February.
No, it fell apart. February. And I put more money in because I'm like, all right, now I'm about to dip. And then it fell apart again. And I put more money in. I said, I'm going to buy this dip. And then it just completely collapsed. And
he gave up on the space.
Yeah. I said, look.
If it was gonna die, it would have, right?
Right.
And one of the things I heard that was powerful to me is the CEO of Ripple said this. He was like, the reason that this is gonna work is because if you think about money, right? What's the fastest way to get $100,000 from San Francisco to London? What do you think?
It's crypto.
He was like, the fastest way in today's society, right? 2018 at the time.
Oh, it's a flight.
Is to get on a plane and fly with that money to London. How is that working in the world of technology?
Right.
Right. that's why Ripple and all these other altcoins and Bitcoin, that's why it's going to work. And when he said that, I'm like, nah, I don't care. This is going to go down. This is not going anywhere.
Sure.
And so, like, one of the things we did too, and Rashad, we for sure, it was like, we were like, look, we're not letting anybody get left on the boat. Like, if they missed the cyber bubble, right, in the 90s, right, if that is this, we got to make sure that we get the Google. We got to make sure that we get Amazon, and we don't get stuck with Excite.com.
Right.
But we're not leaving anybody. So I was like, yo, call everybody you know. Like, we're going to call everybody we know so we can tell them how this works and teach them. And, like, we made mad phone calls, and it was like, yo, nobody wants to learn.
Nah, people ain't playing.
It was like, nah, I'm good.
But all right, so now we gave you my story. It's a tragic story.
But, it's a learning point.
So, all right. So can we talk about crypto? Let's start 101, right? What is cryptocurrency?
So cryptocurrency is it's a digital asset that lives on the internet that has value. And where does the value come from? It comes from people saying it has value, right? And it's that simple. And it's that simple, but it's also that fickle based on what you just said, right? And the question is, like, a lot of people say, all right, how is it a currency? How is anything a currency? Anything is a currency because currency is not backed by anything.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's a belief, right? And it's a belief that if more people believe that it's going to go up in the future, then more people buy. It's a supply and demand thing, and that's what kind of moves it. But yes, it's a digital asset that lives on the internet, and you could transfer it without any middleman. So you don't need... the experience is similar to like a Venmo experience or Zelle experience or whatever, Cash App experience.
So P2P.
But you don't have Cash App in the middle. What's in the middle is actually a community of people that validate every transaction.
And it's So
that's the definition of the blockchain.
Yes, it's validated by the blockchain, exactly.
So yeah, so cryptocurrency, but the name is a little deceiving because it's not really being used as currency right now. It's more so of an investment, right?
Right. So it's an investment because due to the way it's moved, and Bitcoin being the first cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. it's moving up and down just based on the story you just said. People don't want to use it as a currency. It's made to be a currency. It's made to allow people to move money back and forth. But because of the way it's structured, so Bitcoin is structured in a way where there's a limited supply, right?
Was it 17 million?
It's 17 million now, but the max is 21 million.
Okay.
So people are anticipating at that point that it's going to be worth a lot. And so it's kind of transferred from a currency to more of a digital gold.
So it's like it's being viewed as a commodity.
Store of value.
Exactly right.
So that's what Jason had told me. Yeah. So, all right, because this is something that's interesting. So people say like, well, cryptocurrency is in thin air. It's not physical. It's not backed by anything. And I say neither is the American dollar.
Right. That's right.
American dollar used to be backed by gold. But I think in Nixon, he changed it.
He removed the gold standard, yeah.
He removed the gold standard. So now the American dollar, like all dollars all over the world, is only backed by the faith within America. So talk about America. American dollar is only backed by the faith of the people.
Right.
People think that it's worth what it's worth. So at any point in time when the vast majority of people think the American dollar isn't worth anything, it's not worth anything anymore.
Right. Because, I mean, like you said, with Bitcoin, there's a limited supply. Once it gets to 21 million, there's no more, right? So the value of that will go up, obviously, right? Exactly. So that's why you get those projections. Like right. Bitcoin will be worth $500,000 for one coin.
Right.
Whereas a dollar, they can make a million of those every second
exactly
of the
right.
day. So like, what's the real value?
So Bitcoin, that's what most people have heard about Bitcoin,
when they
right?
think cryptocurrency.
Bitcoin is the first crypto, the granddaddy of cryptocurrency, started by Satoshi
Nakamoto. That's right.
Anybody found him yet?
Nobody found him. There's a lot of people claiming it.
Yeah, nobody knows.
There's a lot of people claiming
it. This is the real Wilder right here.
Satoshi Nakamoto. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, that was good, bro. I'll give you some credit. That was good.
If anybody's not familiar, the whole crypto thing is crazy. If anybody's not familiar, the guy's a legend. Nobody even knows if he actually ever really existed, or if he's a group of people, or if he's one person, or if he's still living. Who knows? But he's the founder of crypto.
Yeah,
right.
Because he made Bitcoin, right? Yeah. Then from Bitcoin, you have thousands of cryptocurrencies now.
Over 2,000.
You have a whole bunch of different, from Ethereum to Ripple, and they all kind of serve different purposes. So you have some that are like for just music. You have, it's like all kinds of different, it's like websites now. Like you have a website for everything, and you have a cryptocurrency for everything as well.
And then you have, so like from those, right, the top three you named, Bitcoin, Ethereum, those are like platforms. So people build on those platforms.
Right.
So like, Ethereum, like a bunch of platforms will get built on
Ethereum
that.
Ethereum is like a digital computer.
Right.
Right. You could build on top of it. You could, Ethereum introduced the concept of a smart contract.
Mm.
Right. A smart contract is basically a digital contract that says, if this happens, then this happens. Right. And the way I like to illustrate it is a vending machine is a smart contract. Right. Like I don't need, like I go to a corner store and get a Twizzlers. Or if I go to a vending machine, I put a dollar in, there's code inside a vending machine that gives me the Twizzlers immediately.
Mm.
And Ethereum takes that and makes it a whole nother level, right? And if you think about the internet, most of the internet, like any website, anything, the way it works is if this then that. If I go into gmail.com and I put in my password, if the password is good, then it gives me access. If the password is not good, then it tells me you got the wrong password.
Got three more times to get this right.
Exactly. So Ethereum was the first time to take that code and put it on the blockchain, makes it decentralized. Because like what I just explained to
you,
that's
a key word too, decentralized. Yeah.
Right. So Google is centralized. Like it lives like the way that the code works lives on Google servers in Mountain View in California. Obviously throughout the world, but like that is where the hub is. That vending machine, like that code is in that vending machine, but the way that blockchain and crypto is done, it actually distributes the code around the whole world or whoever wants to be a validator. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. And so it decentralizes it. It makes it democratic and it makes it limitless as well as borderless.
Yeah, that was one of those key words in that space, decentralized. And it was like, if you think about it, like a company like Google, right? Like a lot of times, and it's coming up in the news now, that you know, the federal government is looking into them, but that data that's being sold, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like the middleman selling it, right?
But
like that's one of the things with this space is like, there is no middle guy.
There's no middleman.
You know what I mean? So it makes it—
the middleman is everybody.
Right.
Well, the one thing, and that's one thing that I said, so when I first, my first reservation, before I started investing in cryptocurrency, I made a video on Instagram and it was my reservations on Bitcoin, right? Because everybody kept asking me my feelings about Bitcoin. And I said this, what I said was, I think it's a good idea in theory. And I think that is dope, but my biggest fear is that governments control currency. And at any point in time, when governments feel that they don't have full control of the currency or it's not benefiting them, then they'll stop it. One of the reasons why cryptocurrencies really fell in 2018 is because governments across the world cracked down on them.
It's hard.
China,
South Korea.
Yep.
They just said we're not. You can't trade. And then, like, if you were in the United States, like, and this was, we ran into this problem too. It was like we couldn't buy on certain exchanges. So, like, one of those things, like you said, like as far as like stocks, you can go to different exchanges.
Right.
Same thing with this space, right? There was like Binance was the number one. But we had Cryptotopia?
Cryptopia.
MetaDocs, all these other ones. Like some of them we couldn't buy because we were US citizens.
Right.
So we had to drive.
You couldn't buy ICOs.
Right.
Especially.
I lost some money in that too.
That.
Yeah.
So
ICOs
are
initial.
ICO
is the equivalent of an IPO. So like that's an initial coin offering. So when these companies are coming up with ideas, right, they need funding for it, they make an ICO.
I think it's important to illustrate why so many coins could exist. So it's over 2,000 cryptocurrencies now. You could actually create an EYL token tomorrow.
Right.
The reason why is because the currency is code and the code is open source. So I could go and actually see how Bitcoin works and I could actually create I could change the B to F and make it Fitcoin and Fritzcoin.
That's the white paper.
Uh-huh. That's the white paper, right? So that's how it started. That's how Satoshi Nakamoto, the group or whoever this individual is, that Bitcoin was introduced through the introduction of a white paper. And the white paper basically was like this code / business plan that said how it works, how the code works, and everybody could see exactly how it works. So anybody could pick it up and copy it, right? But just because you pick it up and copy it doesn't mean that people are going to follow you. So you need a community behind it too.
Yeah, so like that's how you get these other coins. Like if you look now on coin
market cap,
you'll see like a Bitcoin Gold or a Bitcoin SV. Like they'll say like, hey, we got that code from their white paper, but we're gonna make it even better.
Yeah, tweak it.
They'll tweak it, right?
So that's why there's like a million different. And another thing that was Satoshi did was he made it open sourced. So anybody can change the code. It's an ongoing process of Bitcoin. It's changing. Anybody can you could change it, right?
Right.
Like it's not something that's set in stone.
Right.
He did that. So his vision, and how I see it, is that his vision was to eliminate the world banks and government from, like, he wanted to make it peer-to-peer and also open source, evolving, yeah, where it's for the people.
Well, actually, funny enough, it goes back to my story, like Lehman Brothers. He's created in 2008. Mm-hmm. It derived out of a community of libertarians, anarchists, so people that didn't trust the government, and there was a level of high distrust amongst people from the financial system in general, just because Lehman Brothers went down. And he had a community, and he said, listen, I'm gonna create this thing that doesn't need banks. Like, we could actually work without banks, we could work without the government, and we could transact to each other, trustless. And that's kind of where the fervor came from.
Mm. Yeah, man. It's crazy.
It's ill. All right,
I'm telling you, man, we read a lot of white papers, man.
So, all right, so tax, right? Because that's what you're doing now with the tax.
Right.
So that's another issue, because everything is so new that the government's trying to, like, catch up to it, right? So we know how, like, real estate is taxed a certain way, stocks are taxed a certain way, it's called capital gains tax. So can you explain the taxes on that? Because that's what you're working with now, right?
Right. So I work with a company called Token Tax. Mm-hmm. And so the easy explanation is, like, TurboTax of crypto. And so crypto, if you trade crypto, it's very hard to calculate your taxes, because the assumption is that, all right, I go from, let's say you're from the US, I go from dollar to crypto, and then I go from back to crypto back to dollar, that's when I have to pay taxes. But actually, when you're in the crypto world, like we said, there's about 2,000 cryptos, you could trade from crypto to crypto, and you actually have to all those things are taxable transactions. It's as if you, when you sell one for the other, the government actually looks at that as a sell and a buy. And also, there's other things, like you could actually work for crypto and get paid in crypto, that's taxable. You also buy things in crypto, and that's also a taxable transaction. So all of that is complex to calculate.
Yeah.
And so the company I work with, their software basically hooks into all the wallets, all the exchanges, and pulls in your transactions and converts the dollar equivalent. So an example is, all right, I go from dollar to Bitcoin, then I trade Bitcoin to Ethereum, then I trade from Ethereum back to maybe Ripple, right? I didn't go back to dollars, but all those three transactions are taxable.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I went from Bitcoin to Ether, there I have to actually look at the USD value of Bitcoin from each time and convert it back, even though I didn't go into dollars. So we allow that calculation.
Yeah, and the government, they just put out an article last week where they're going to start taxing. They sent out 10,000 letters to people who invested.
Yeah, so going back to how crypto started, obviously with there's a lot of anarchist libertarians, and a lot of these people are like anti-taxes because they don't trust the government. They don't think the government's doing the right thing. And people were under the false belief that you don't have to pay taxes on crypto. But one of the things that they created was transparency in the blockchain. And so, yes, it's transparent amongst them. But IRS also see that those transactions too, right? So you actually are exposing yourself. So you actually have to pay taxes on that.
Yeah.
And what's CoinGamma?
So CoinGamma is my own media platform. So it started with an app that I built as a side project in 2015. 2017, I expanded it to a blog as well as a podcast where I interview leaders in the space. And just provide education. And so what we do is we write about the space, we offer educational content, we interview leaders in the space, and we're actually gonna start coming up with digital courses where people could kind of
teach people.
Yeah, so I've taught some in-person classes. So I've taught in-person classes in New York City, and also I've taught at my alma mater. So I've lectured at Wharton as well as Brew College around crypto and blockchain. But I'll be doing some online courses over the next few weeks.
How do you invest in cryptocurrency?
All right, I mean, it depends where you are, but if you're in the US, you have to take your dollars, you have to transact on an exchange that actually takes fiat, which is dollars, and converts it to crypto. Most exchanges actually do not do that. So you mentioned Binance earlier. Binance doesn't take dollars, right? There are some major exchanges in the US that take dollars and convert it for you. And it's similar to like buying something on PayPal, right? So Coinbase is the most popular. Another one is Robin Hood, yeah. Right?
That just happened in New York, right? We just got that like this year.
Another one is the Cash App, right? So if you use the Cash App to pay friends or family for, you know, dinner or something like that, you actually could buy Bitcoin the same way. But if you wanted to buy another cryptocurrency, so if it's a cryptocurrency, so now all cryptocurrencies on every exchange. So if there's a crypto, Coinbase has a limited supply of cryptos. Same thing with the other apps I mentioned. So the Cash App, as well as the Robinhood app. But if you want to do some of the other cryptos, you actually have to basically buy the Bitcoin or Ethereum on Coinbase, then move it to the other exchange, right? And then you could transact on the exchange. And that's how people get caught up.
That's extremely complicated.
Notorious B.I.G. had a legendary line when he said, "Strictly for live men, not for freshmen.
Not for freshmen, right. For sure.
Cryptocurrency, don't play around with it if you don't understand what you're doing.
There's been plenty of days where we got calls like, yo, didn't go through. What happened?
Actually, it's probably gotten more user-friendly now. I don't even look at it anymore. I have my money invested, but I don't look at it. But at one point, I was looking at it every day. But it was extremely complicated when we first got in because you had to, like you said, you can't buy cryptocurrency with American dollars. You can trade dollars for Bitcoin.
Or Ethereum or
Litecoin in Coinbase at that time.
At that time, yeah.
And then you can buy the other coins. It was mainly Bitcoin or Ethereum.
Networks,
some of them you can buy with Litecoin, but most of them. So let's say you wanted to buy Tron, right?
Right.
You had to exchange American money for Bitcoin on Coinbase.
Mm-hmm.
From Coinbase, you had to send your Bitcoin to Binance.
The exchange, yep.
And it went, now it's in Binance.
You skip the step because the transaction speed was so slow, which is one of the things about Bitcoin. So you'd have to, so let's say you sent $1,000 or $5,000, right? It would take maybe a half hour before it even got to the
Bitcoin
exchange.
Was OD. I remember one time Bitcoin took me 5 hours. I'm like, where's the customer service? Like, I'm like,
no,
what's going
service?
On? It's crazy.
Real. Because I mean, if I was on the Venmo or Cash App and I sent it to the wrong person, I could hit up Cash App and say, "Yo, I sent it to the wrong person.
You made a mistake.
Give me a chargeback." If I Bank of America and I wired the money to the wrong person, I could call Bank of America. It'll be a mistake. Because this thing is decentralized, it's owned by you and it's owned, you also,
it's in a black hole. So now it's in Binance, and then from now you have to buy Tron with the Bitcoin in Binance. Mm-hmm. So it's like a three-part process. What happens is that, and then you had, so when you send it, they send you a code. It's a code that you have to put in to send it to one place to another. This is something that is extremely important. This has happened to me. It happened to me on my birthday 2 years ago. I sent $500. I was trying to buy Bitcoin Gold, or was it Bitcoin Cash? It was another Bitcoin.
It might have been Bitcoin Cash.
I was trying to buy Bitcoin Cash, but I put the code for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Long story short, I sent the wrong code. After I sent, I'm like, damn. So I go back. I'm like, I sent $500, but I sent it to the wrong address. I'm gone.
Yeah, like nobody complained to you.
Nah, it's gone. Yeah. It's nobody to track it. It's just, it's in the universe.
If somebody
it's gone. It. Somebody lost like 21 Bitcoins like that.
Yeah.
They lost 21 Bitcoins because they sent it to the wrong address or something. And just gone.
It's crazy, man. But like, even like that, it was like, there's so many steps to it. Like, this is not like, we weren't sleeping, like legit weren't sleeping. It was like, you know what? I'm not even gonna do this transaction till the morning. But by the time you wake up, the value could have gone up by like 1,000%.
Right. So because of that, you probably moving so fast and frantic because you go, I gotta buy this. And that leaves you open to making those mistakes.
Exactly.
Even if you are sharp.
Now,
right?
I was moving like a fiend. I was moving like a fiend. Like, cause it was like, we gotta do this right now, or they just, so I'm like halfway like awake trying to do this on my phone, and it's like, damn, like I didn't really have time to really think about it, but you become addicted.
Yeah,
right.
It's very addictive, especially at that time, because there was so much money being made and it was moving so fast. Anything with crypto is that it's 24 hours. It's like the stock market on steroids. Stock market, they close, it's way more structured. Right. Crypto's like the wild, wild west.
No sleep.
It's 24 hours a day, and you have what these call whales.
Yeah.
And these whales are like, these are like the big dogs. They like crypto is really it's really controlled. It's like all things, even though it was made for the people, it's only controlled by like a handful of people,
right,
that have millions, billions of dollars, and they move it. They move the market so right. crazy.
If
and
they sell their Bitcoin, Bitcoin's going to drop.
Exactly right.
Nah, they know what they're doing. So it's like it's hard to day trade in that space because you get eaten up. Right. You get eaten up.
Unless that's what I'm saying. Like even if you sit in front of your computer, it's like you can't watch them all. Like it you was. Watch them all. I mean, this was like no sleep before like 2 months.
Right.
Like you'll get text messages. Like our group chat, it would be like, I remember when Tron went from less than a penny to like 15 cents. I would like the thank you text were just right, coming in. I'm right. like. I woke up like, yo, what happened? Like, right. I missed it. You know what I'm saying?
Nah, because I brought Tron at 2 cents.
Yeah.
And it went to 38 cents. I think it, the highest that it got to was 38 cents. So that's why, like I said, when I went from 6,000 to 28,000, I had a couple. I brought Ripple at like 90 cents. And I sold Ripple at like $3.15.
Wow.
So it was like, the good times was rolling. The good times was rolling. Oh, but, man. All right, so can we talk about, like you said, okay, so now we got established of how to actually buy it. How do you evaluate coins? Like, how do you know which coin to buy? Like, yeah. how does somebody do that?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think the space is early. A lot of these things are moving. A lot of these things are actually pre-product. Right, so people, a lot of these coins out there are raising money on a hope, right? They're going out there and they're pitching like a white paper, which is like their business plan. And they're saying, all right, well, if you give us the money and you'll get a coin and you will be able to use it for X, Y, and Z. And you have to study that. You have to look at the technology, right? Because sometimes a lot of these coins actually are, like you said, you talk about Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Cash, there's like a bunch of Bitcoins, there's Litecoin, there's a bunch of coins that actually are trying to do exactly what the major ones are doing. And what they're doing is tweaking it and say, all right, we're going to be faster, we're going to be more secure, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And so you have to figure out whether that story resonates with you, right? So you have to study that. But most importantly, you could believe that, but because of supply and demand, is actually you need other people to believe it too, right? Like you could believe in that new Christian or Islamic religion or that new whatever religion, right? But you may be the only person at church or mosque or whatever by yourself, right? Unless you bring it. So it is very religious in certain aspects because mm-hmm. it's their community aspects. Because the value of these assets are them going up, so you need more people to buy it, or they're able to be used amongst the community between each other. So if you're the only person that if you get into it and then people don't follow you or a community doesn't follow you, then they're not going to go up no matter how strong you believe it to be. So you not only have to analyze the fundamentals of it, you also have to read what other people think about it. So a lot of research is actually spending time on Twitter, spending time on Reddit, spending time on these apps like Telegram and Oof. Discord where people are talking about it and seeing what the energy is like.
Yeah.
And so it makes no sense to have to make your investment decisions based on what other people think. But in this space, it's just the way it is.
Now, they got the whole terminology like hold.
HODL.
HODL.
H-O-L-D. No, I mean, H-O-D-L.
H-O-D-L. Hold on for dear life.
Yeah.
To the moon was like rocket. It was like when something was going up
to the moon. Yeah, that's when we knew
to the moon. To the moon. They call those altcoins shit coins. Yeah, it's a whole.
Altcoins were just any coin outside of the top three, really.
Basically, yeah.
No, it's a whole culture. Cryptocurrency was a whole culture.
Yeah. I mean, we studied it down to the T, right? When we started, I know Shadi, when he's amazing with numbers, so he started studying the market caps for each one. And then after we saw the market caps, we saw the coin supply, right? So like right. you said that, yo, they have 21 million. That means like, yo, in this space, that's pretty limited.
Right.
But then you'll get a coin that'll come out as like, there's only 2,000 of it, right? Whereas like Ripple was like, what was it 65, right. something like crazy, billion right. or something like that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know what I'm saying? So like, you can see like, hey, what's the growth on that? If there's 65 billion and it's only at, like right now it's probably like 51 cents. It's like, well, how high can this really go? This ain't gonna be a $20 coin. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's too many of them.
But here's the problem with, so, you know, we talked about the fiat currencies, like the dollar, euro, et cetera, and how there's, each country, they have like a Federal Reserve that could create unlimited supply. Bitcoin doesn't have like a group of people. All these other coins actually are centralized, so they're actually a little bit more like fiat money. So yes, they could go out with a white paper that says, "Yeah, we're gonna limit it." Mm-hmm. But there's been coins that like they were out and like the people that were behind it or the company behind it decided to just change the code.
Oh, we're gonna do more.
Like, yeah, we're gonna do more, right? And there's no it's a wild west because there's no SEC to like stop them. There's a lot of coin. In 2017, a lot of coins, raise all that money and they were supposed to come out with things and they bounced, right?
A few of them took my money.
Yeah, it's scary. But like, I think one thing that, Rashad talked about earlier is like, you put $6,000, it was like, that was what you could lose. Like, even to this day, like, I don't put money you could lose. Like, do not. At that time, I would get texts from people like, "Hey, like my retirement's not right. Thinking about like putting money in as a retirement, Bitcoin's a retirement."
Play with what you can lose.
And like, nah, only play with what you could lose.
Don't play with the big boys if you're not ready, man. Because like I said, nah, it's real talk.
It's humbling.
We don't have control over this.
Yeah.
It's very. We don't have control over anything, but especially crypto, because it's very thin. It's very thin, and that's one of the things that actually got me involved. Once I saw the market cap, it was like 100. What's the market cap now?
It's probably like 200 in the 200
million, right?
No,
billion.
Billion.
So
we got up pretty high to like 900.
Yeah, it was supposed to hit a trillion.
Yeah, it was supposed to hit a trillion. But at that time, I don't think it was even at a billion at that time. I think it was like 900 million, something like that. But long story short, even where it's at now, it's a couple hundred billion. That's not a lot of money. That sounds like a lot of money, but that's really not a lot of money.
Nah, it's really not a lot because if you look at traditional assets, I tell people all the time, yeah, the whole crypto market is $250 billion, but guess what? Fidelity, one investment shop, has $7 trillion under assets.
No, that's a fact.
By themselves, $7 trillion, right? So like, this is a speckle,
a drop,
a drop.
That's why when I first got into it, I'm like, look, it's a lot more room for it to grow because the market value is so low. And that's one of the things that made me get into it. And that's one of the reasons why I still actually hold out hope, because I feel like
that's why if it was gonna die. It would have.
No, it would have died over the last year and a half.
Exactly.
Right? No, because Bitcoin went down. People were like, it's over. Like, it's a wrap. And it came back up.
Yeah.
And it's trading, kind of trading.
And we never know why. It's just people, the belief, you said.
Right. It's the belief.
Nah. So, yeah. All right. So now you got the education. But for people that want more information, how can they contact you? What's your podcast and your app or your information?
Yeah. So the podcast app, Instagram as well as Twitter is all the same thing, Coin Gamma. So CoinGamma. Gamma is like a term that is in the options world, that in my old world that I brought over. But yeah, Coin Gamma is it. And if you search my name's relatively unique, so you'll find me. So Fritz Charles on LinkedIn. I kind of changed my last name on Twitter and Instagram. Is Fritz Chain. You'll follow me on Fritz Chain on that.
Like blockchain?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little pun on the way. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So you can find me on all those platforms. And yeah, I'm always putting out educational content. DM me, add me on LinkedIn, and we could chat for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So Troy, Patreon?
Yeah, shout out to Patreon. It's our Proud to Pay program, patreon.com/earnyourleisure. Every week, it seems to be growing. Right?
It's a community.
It's a community now, man. So we got some new members. I'm going to shout them out. Ashan, Renina, Nicola, Tripp, Jana, Tyrus, and we got to give a huge shout out to Tony. Shout out to Tony. He was one of our members from a couple months ago, but he made a video, like a testimonial video, just about how great Patreon is. So he just did that out of love for us. So shout out to Tony and everybody that's been supporting on Patreon.
Nah, it's amazing. Patreon is amazing. It's like I said, it's a community, and EYL University is real. We're launching some stuff. Everything is top secret right now, but if you can't get this level of information, even if you paid to go to school,
you probably wouldn't.
It'd be very difficult to get this.
There's so many areas.
Because it's real world. It's not just people just supply and demand charts. This is actually real world people that's actually in the field doing it themselves. Like, you can't get that kind of information in college. Professors aren't. They don't do that. Most professors aren't.
If they study in one area, right?
Yeah.
So we're giving everything.
No, it's different. It's a different level of education. We was in Atlanta, somebody said that they got 2 master's degrees and they learned more from our podcast than they got from the master's
degree.
That's amazing.
That's amazing, right?
So Patreon is a lot cheaper than any university in America.
There's different level tiers, like we said, on every episode. So you can join at any level you like. But we're just going to keep putting the information out.
Nah, for sure. For sure. And then book tip of this week is Bitcoin Billionaires from the Winklevoss.
It's about the Winklevoss.
Winklevoss twins. And it chronicles their journey. If anybody's not familiar, those are the guys that Facebook, they... Well, depending on how you look at it, they might have got screwed out of Facebook, but they got the last laugh at the end because they won
the lawsuit.
Well, that, yeah. But they became the first billionaires off of Bitcoin. That was a fact. I don't know, they probably lost some money now, but they made so much money, yeah. It doesn't matter. We get that point, it doesn't
matter.
And
they created their own exchange.
No. They're powerful players in the Bitcoin market. Sure. So it's a good book. I highly recommend it. And we will see you guys in 3 days because we have, as I said, this week is different. We're going to put out 2 episodes this week. So we'll see you back on Friday at 5 p.m. Keep spreading the word and peace.
Peace.